Welcome to this episode of Leave It to Lopez, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show episode by episode. I am one of your Lopez Lovers hosts, Kyle, joined by Tim. How are you doing today, Tim?
I'm doing quite well, quite well. Happy to be here to talk some George Lopez.
I know, finally. Holding up out there, is it? It's like, we've talked numerous times. I'm in New York. It's getting really fucking warm, which sucks, but how is it out there?
Today, it was about 65 and raining. So, it's actually nice.
Well, I'm glad you had some nice weather, because I got some bad news as always. I know every time we plan this. We're not going to be able to talk about George Lopez tonight.
It's too bad.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to talk about the episode when a janitor there with no life insurance dies at work, and Andy finds out that George has been lying and does not have life insurance either. We actually have a really good episode. Really excited. We're going to be talking to writer, director, actor, everything possible, Andrew Bowser, about the amazing new Kickstarter, Onyx the Fortuitous. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm also bummed we're not talking George Lopez. Dang it.
I know. You know, the guests are always is bummed, but one of these times they're going to be surprised enough to talk. So I think most people are obviously probably familiar with, you know, the viral videos and kind of the shorter format stuff you've done with him. And you, I mean, a pretty, at this point, I think, established director and even actor as well. Why does this, like, Onyx, obviously he's a popular character, but why move him to kind of this long form media and longer form film? Why do you think, like, why was this kind of the next step for you for this project?
Well, over the years of doing the character in different internet formats, like these newscast videos or live event package videos, eventually we did do a web series with the character for a place called Nerdist. Mm-hmm. And doing that web series is when I realized that there was more room to grow him in the narrative context. And I liked kind of learning more about his interior life, and I liked meeting people that were around him, and I liked seeing the different shapes he took when he was around different characters and in different scenarios. And then when that ended, they chose not to do any more of that series. I think we did 6 or 7 episodes. I always had it in my head to try and do something long form with him, but I was thinking, oh, series. So I wrote a pilot that we tried to get going at Nerdist. That also didn't happen. And then I kind of stepped away from creating consistent Onyx content, even though he's a really big part of my creative life and I love him. He's a big part of me. And I think at some point, you know, I guess I just always thought, well, my interests as a director are separate from Onyx. Onyx is like, sometimes I could look at him as a distraction from what I want to do as a director. And I don't have as much of an interest performing as I have directing and writing. But I can't deny that Onyx, out of everything I've done, has worked the best for people and for an audience, even if it's, you know, these pockets of viral responses that I've gotten over the years. And so at some point over the last 6-7 months, I had the idea that I felt like blended my interest as a director and what would excite me as a writer and a creator and would heighten the character of Onyx. And they felt completely blended, and I felt very excited about the idea, and I just felt, well, that was the time to move on it. And I'd made a couple shorts leading up to writing the Onyx script that also kind of primed me for writing the Onyx script. So it just felt like everything was aligning internally for me to tackle this project.
And I've heard you talk in kind of other interviews about the project, kind of avoiding like the, you know, kind of the SNL sketch movie where you don't want it to feel like a series of kind of vignettes or sketches for this character, mm-hmm. Especially coming from that kind of setup for him. And I think of your other projects like Worm and Jimmy Tupper, where they're directorially, I think they're very innovative in that sense, but also kind of, especially Worm, I mean, obviously like a far like darker and more like developed story in that way.
Yeah.
Is that something you wanted to bring? Was that easy for you to kind of put Onyx in that realm and kind of expand it out to make it feel like a story? I know that's something, like you said, you've struggled, like kind of making sure it's not, you know, like Night at the Roxbury or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that I have a hard time explaining, and I like talking about it because I feel like every time I try to explain it, I get a little better at understanding it myself. But I think what I tried to do is I needed the story to be interesting and the plot to have enough heft to it that it felt like a movie, like on its own, not necessarily without Onyx, but it isn't just the character is enough and then now let's watch a string out of gags. But at the same time, this is the part I have a hard time explaining. The plot can't be too intricate or, in a way, too innovative, because that is almost like a hat on a hat. Like, you can't make a movie with Onyx, this eccentric character, and then throw him in something that's, like, never been done in cinema. Because that's the thing. You know, it's almost like with Worm, similarly, the plot had to be kind of familiar enough. It had to be, in a way, it had to step through tropes, like wrongly accused man, on the run, these hardships. But then I can dress it up with things I think that make it more unique and specific. But the way of filming it was so unique, you kind of want the plot to be more familiar, because you're asking people to move through something that might be highly unfamiliar, if that makes sense. Right. And so with the Onyx script, it's like, Onyx is so out there, I wanted to place him in a familiar plot, even though it might not be, I'm hoping it's not incredibly derivative, but, you know, it's guys invited, it's a Dark Mansion movie. You know, a group of people are invited to a Dark Mansion, and they find out they shouldn't have gone. I mean, that's like, that's it, you know? It's a Dark Mansion movie with Onyx in the middle of it. But I do think what's surprising about the plot is that, I guess just that it still takes everything seriously, which a lot of times in comedies, they don't. And that might be the style of comedy, but this still takes everything seriously. Every death, every threat, there's still real fear. He still has real sadness. So I think that's maybe what's inventive about it, even though the plot movements might be familiar. You might not be surprised. Like, spoiler alert, the guy who invited them to the mansion is bad. But, you know, we should all know that going in.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Like, with Worm, especially, again, that's a very character-driven piece in itself, but also kind of the unique aspect of the filming and the approach to it and kind of, like, the center point on the character. If you made that, like, a almost, like, Tenet-style, like, neo-noir, yeah, like, that's going to pull people out because then, like, oh, fuck, I got to focus on this in addition to kind of the character piece. So, yeah, like, and I think Onyx itself is a character almost like, and I don't want, just coincidence kind of referencing an SNL character, but someone like Garth, where he is obviously fairly goofy and kind of oblivious, but at the same time, like, there's a lot of, like, kind of naivety and heart driven in that. And, like, Onyx seems like someone where you can have a lot of fun with him, but, like, throwing him in situations where he has to deal with, you know, real problems, death, stuff like that, could work, because he's not, like, obnoxious, or he's not, like, he seems genuine in that sense, which is, I would imagine, the appeal of the character for you as well.
Yeah, I liken it. Garth's a great example, and I always liked Garth the best. And I liken it to, like, putting a Rick Moranis character in a movie like this instead of a Chevy Chase character in a movie like this. Because, you know, the Chevy Chase persona is always above everything, whether it be in real life or as a performer. But, you know, rewatching something like Nothing But Trouble, I think that movie could have been elevated if the lead comedic performance had actually been anchored in a bit more terror and, you know, been like a Rick Moranis type. And it's funny that you bring up Tenet because, yeah, conversely, I think when Nolan does things that are really high concept plot-wise, he has to simplify his characters. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because I think in Tenet, that's why that, you can argue it works or doesn't, but that's why it could work in theory. He takes the characters down to, like, mega villain, protagonist, you know, helper guy. I mean, like, everybody is, everybody's an archetype, because that movie is so complicated in plot and in structure. It can't also have this, like, eccentric performance at the center of it that's this layered guy that's got a big backstory and vocal tics and, you know, you don't know what he's made up of. Like, it's got to be pretty straightforward from a character perspective when you get that wobbly with the structure.
Right. I think, and we obviously on the show we do a lot of cover a lot of creators from the comic book medium, and even the kind of prose itself. And like, that's I think understanding the medium you're kind of working in that sense. Like, you know, a movie you only have nowadays 3 hours or so to work with something, so you kind of have to pick like what do you want people to get out of the movie, and then how I'm going to structure way around that versus like, you know, if I have 16 issues or I have 600 pages of a book, I kind of have room to like fuck with stuff. But like,
yeah,
like I really like films, you kind of have to focus on what do you want to get out of it, and then how is the way I'm going to approach it as a director, writer, stuff like that going to work best for that scenario.
Yeah.
For you kind of writing this, I obviously you've written longer stuff, but kind of in this character work and something you're going to have to, you know, perform as on it, how has your writing approach or process been to this movie? Has this been a lot easier because it's someone you've kind of lived in for such a long time?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I hate to say it, but it was incredibly easy. I think I got stuck early on when I started bringing in this ensemble, because I knew Onyx's voice so well, and I didn't outline this, and a lot of times I do, but I didn't outline it. I just knew these tentpole, these kind of mile markers. I hiked a lot and listened to music just enough to get these tentpoles mapped out that would get me kind of to every, you know, 15 or 20 pages. And the truth is those tentpoles didn't move. And those are exactly what's in the script. Or I'd land on a very specific joke that I wanted to see, and I had to then build it out from there to make sense for the plot. Because I gave myself a rule that, like, something can't just be funny. It has to also serve the purpose of moving the story along. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots to say. There's plenty of things that are kind of just funny. But there can't be an entire scene dedicated to a goof. It's got to move the story. And so sitting down to write, it all moved incredibly well. And I make a little schedule for myself that's like, usually for a feature, I just map out like 3 pages a day. And I normally am like kind of having a hard time getting those 3 pages out. Whereas for the Onyx script, I was always hitting like 5 or 6 pages a day. But then I also overshot my page count, and I have like 120 page draft right now. But it was difficult when I brought in these new characters, because he goes to this mansion with a group of other people that have won a contest, like Willy Wonka style. And I initially started writing them to be very tropey. And I guess, I don't know if all writers experience this, but sometimes your first pass at something is like a real, it's not just shitty, it's like you wrote the bad thing you'd criticize somebody else for writing. And I started writing these characters that were really thin and these two-dimensional people, and I just thought, well, you got Onyx there. I don't know. Maybe there's like a jock. Maybe there's like this super goth girl that's kind of like annoying and dead to the world and hates everybody. But then I started writing them, and I couldn't write. There were no words coming out of their mouths. And so I took a step back and I thought, who would I place around Onyx as 4 other Satanists that I could write for, that I could see kind of life in? And as soon as I started plugging in unexpected types, all of a sudden, that fit the personality of the Onyx movie. So I pictured a woman in her 40s who was the wife of a Christian pastor her whole life, who's now a Satanist. I pictured a man in his 60s who's a professor of theology that just fell in love with, like, kind of Luciferian teachings over the years of seeking knowledge. And as soon as I filled it out with unexpected types, and yes, there's still kind of a goth person, and there's still, like, a young person that wants to be a witch, but even they aren't super, super stereotypical. But once I put those types in and I allowed them to be more three-dimensional, I started writing very easily. And I also had to picture specific actors, so I picture specific personalities. I don't know how people do it that don't picture. You know, there's writers that are like, oh, I never picture who it's going to be, because then you'll just get attached to that person. I don't necessarily get attached to the person. I have to have a voice and a personality in my head to write for. So then once I did that, yeah, it was kind of like pedal to the metal.
That's it. I mean, that's interesting, because it sounds like even kind of the idea with the movie is like, putting things in place that work with Onyx versus kind of shoving him in a scenario.
Yeah.
And having that again. So having kind of characters that play well off him versus kind of just working specifically to the horror tropes and how those would play in a movie. Because then you get, it might be like a fish out of water thing where that like pulls people out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've kind of described this as like an homage and love letter to kind of the 80s and like even like early 90s adventure horror type movies, you know, Fright Night. We were talking before we started, one of the greatest horror movies, Monster Squad.
Yeah.
You mentioned even the Kickstarter video, kind of the rarity of them nowadays. And I think because they're so hard to do, and they don't obviously, like, it's a hard pitch now, but like having fun, including scares and also being humorous, like those are three things that are incredibly difficult to juggle, especially with film. And they're all kind of so hinged on tone. How have you kind of approached that? Have you done a lot of research into why those worked and like bringing it to that and being able to kind of juggle all those aspects?
Yeah, I think it's like, I think everybody gets something different from the things they love, and specifically the fans of these 80s movies. I think a lot of times certain filmmakers that may pay homage to the same movies that I'm in love with, it's like they cull different things from those pieces. I mean, I can't tell you how many things I watch where it's like, oh, it's an homage to 80s movies, so it's all lit in neon, purple, pink, and blue. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, there's like a scene in Fright Night like that when they're at the club, but that's, right. Everybody's kind of paying homage purely in the Stranger Things sense of they're paying homage to the nostalgic elements or the elements that have kind of survived. But when you actually sit down and watch these movies, they're not that out of step. They're not that out of time. And they're not baked in the things that we think of as being 80s now. I mean, some films are. If you watch like The Wraith, if that Charlie Sheen movie, you know, that feels like it's a parody made now of what we thought 80s films were like. But Fright Night doesn't feel like that to me. Gremlins doesn't feel like that to me. Ghostbusters doesn't feel like that to me. And so I think what I needed to do was, like, in a really weird way that sounds probably over heady and like I'm over intellectualizing the process, was kind of meditate on a vibe of one movie, really. And I just put Fright Night on my TV VCR while I wrote, just on a loop. And as I'm writing, I literally would just look up at the screen and I would just see, oh, okay, so here's an element from Fright Night. The fact that there's a friend in the movie that turns, and it's kind of foreshadowed he's going to turn because his nickname is Evil, and he's a little antagonizing to the lead the whole time. And I just kind of write down that, like, that's a trope that I'd like to showcase in this and either subvert or emphasize. And then I'd say, okay, well, there's, you know, somebody that acts kind of like fatherly to the main character, and that's Peter Vincent to Charlie. So I want to have that dynamic. So I have this Mr. Duke character who's the teacher, and he's a really calming presence for Onyx. So I guess I'm all over the place, but my point is, it's a matter of focusing on the movies, but like through the specific lens of what do I actually get from these films that I want to revisit that's purely outside of the style of them. And so it might be character relationships. It might be some tropes that I think are fine to revisit. A lot of it is just like heart and mood. And then that's kind of what I tried to distill into the piece. I definitely don't have a hard time. Like, there's no part of me that leans toward doing the like really over the top Critters or Killer Clowns, even though I love those movies. Like, that's not the Onyx vibe. The Onyx movie is leaning toward more grounded, which it sounds insane to say, but I do think Gremlins and Fright Night and Ghostbusters are more grounded, and it's mostly because of the human relationships they present.
Yeah, I think that is like inherently the key to those movies is, again, they are very much character pieces. You know, Fright Night, especially, like, it's following his adventure. I think one of my favorite, I would classify it a horror movie, is The Burbs. And, and that's not only a character beat, but it's like a look of, like, you know, suburban America and what's that like. And like you said, it's very grounded in a sense that it's not necessarily about in horror in general. Like, good horror, I think, should be set aside from time. Like, it can work, you know, whenever it exists. It's more about the tone, the feel, the characters, and really kind of driving empathy and fear for them. So, like, that is kind of something that I don't know why. I feel like it works now. I don't know, like, maybe Hereditary or something like that. But even that, like, that's more kind of tone and slow burn case. Like, there's nothing seems to capture the fun. Because even, like, Mandy was maybe the closest, but that's just, like, absurdist. It's fun, but, like, it's not really, there's no real heart in Mandy outside of, like, loving Cheddar Goblin.
That kind of just escalates to be like a montage of absurdity and of insanity, which is its own style. But yeah, that doesn't feel particularly throwback to me in any way, even though it was regarded as such. And I think that's the main thing I wanted to try and recapture, is that fun and sense of adventure that doesn't heighten to, I guess, parody. Yeah, like, that doesn't heighten to parody of an 80s film.
One thing I wondered, again, I think, especially people who kind of have very unique ability to have kind of character actors, but also kind of develop a character and really play them out over a scenario that works versus just kind of, like, I don't want to say one note, but, like, there's more to Onyx, and you've progressed that over the series of videos and the six shorts with the Nerdist. I know in your past you did wedding videos, correct?
Yeah.
Was that something, as someone who's like, I listen to like Henry Zebrowski a lot, who's like a really I think great character actor, and something he kind of notes about people. Is that something, like, being a wedding, shooting wedding videos or being in those kind of series, like, watching people? I feel like that's something where you get to, like, watch people and understand how they work and kind of develop. Is that something, like, Onyx is so unique in that, like, again, he's awkward, but not, like, there's a lot of depth to him, which is weird to say.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Shooting wedding videos, I mean, I got to the point where I definitely didn't enjoy doing it as much as I did at the start. And it's no surprise, I mean, I've wanted to be a filmmaker my whole life. So yeah, of course, shooting wedding videos is gonna feel like a bit of a bummer. But at the same time, I was able to make a living shooting wedding videos, and I was able to buy gear, and I was able to constantly kind of be updating my computer and what I was editing on. So I wasn't ever looking a gift horse in the mouth, but you always have to be, like, a little dissatisfied to make sure you keep pushing to get to the thing you wanna do beyond wedding videos. But the people watching side of it was invaluable. Wedding videos, and then I used to be a casting editor for audition tapes for shows Wipeout or Parental Control on MTV or Bridezillas or The Real Housewives of blank. I was in the casting editing department for so many shows like that. And the pressure people feel when they're on camera that are not prepared to be on camera is something I will be obsessed with until the end of time. And that is, like, baked into Onyx's DNA. I mean, that's why the first Onyx videos even happened, was because of that energy of someone being like a you know, deer in the headlights and feeling both pressure to perform, but also having no real experience performing, and just immediately feeling the floor just drop out from under them. And I have so many moments from weddings of, like, groomsmen being like, "You filming, dude? You filming? Okay, get ready, dude." Because honestly, we are crazy. Like, these dudes right here are fucking nuts. You're going to catch some wild shit today, dude. And then nothing happens, you know, like, just this kind of pomp and circumstance. And then also incredibly uncomfortable toasts. I mean, I have toasts that I've saved. I don't show them publicly to make fun, but I save them for myself as, like, little character examples. Same for wedding, same for audition tapes. I used to keep a running collection, and I do it as a joke with Onyx. I do it all the time. But there was this kid that auditioned for Parental Control where, and they asked him if he could, the casting director kind of knew I got a kick out of certain personality types. So she would kind of push it and get them to do stuff that I knew, she knew would make me laugh. But this, she said, I, you know, to this one guy auditioning for Parental Control, she was like, I hear you do impressions. Like, what are some impressions you can do? She knows he's not going to do a good job at these impressions. She's doing this so that, like, I have something that makes me uncomfortable while I'm editing that I laugh at as somebody that loves uncomfortable things. And so she asks this person to do impressions, and he hypes up this Scooby-Doo impression for, like, minutes. He's like, oh, well, honestly, like, yeah, there's one that I can do really well, and it's Scooby-Doo. So hold on, like, let me get ready. And he clears his throat, and he takes all this time, and then the second he starts doing Scooby-Doo, he gets a coughing fit, and he can't stop. And he says, so all he gets out is Scooby-Doo. And then he just launches into this cough. And I mean, I think that maybe at that point I'd already done Onyx. Maybe not, though. But that's like, that's Onyx to a T. There was this other kid that auditioned for Parental Control that wanted to show people his dancing skills, but he was dressed a lot like Onyx, a lot of chains on his pants and shirts, a lot of bracelets, kind of goth. And his lav mic was just right next to a big chain around his neck. So as he did this kind of weird popping and locking and like gyrating, it just, the sound of the chain on the lav was so obnoxious that it rendered everything he was doing really unimpressive, because all you're thinking about is how fucking loud the chains are. So anyway, there's just a million things from audition tapes that factor into, yeah. I mean, I even did a little web series just about this guy auditioning for a game show and just getting out of control, because people in the audition room for game shows, they'd be told to get more hyped, get more hyped. And then, you know, people would just get weird. They would just be like, yeah, yeah, screaming at the top of their lungs. And the casting director would be like, well, okay, don't go that far. Anyway, I have a million audition tape stories. One more. There's this guy auditioning for Wipeout, and I fucking made like a whole remix of this. Really eccentric older guy, and they said, so why should you be on Wipeout? And if anybody remembers, on Wipeout, you jump and there'd be these giant balls in the water that would just like throw you into the air. And he said, well, I should be on Wipeout because I got big balls, baby. anyway, so, yeah, I got a lot from that stuff.
It's always one of the most interesting things to me as someone who's like overly like anxious and self-con, like I am like 100% like someone's watching me at all times, like saying, look at this guy, look what he's doing. Like I'm so, yeah, like the people who are just obviously like so free, but at the same time shouldn't be, but have no like no care. And like Onyx is very much that, like in the sense where like it's like why are you like this? But at the same time I'm jealous, because like I'm like, oh no, what am I saying? Am I smiling enough? What am I doing? Like yeah, there's like such a unique character type that inhabits those people.
Yeah, and Onyx is, it's weird because he's so constricted, but also so extroverted in ways. Mm. And the stuff he says, I mean, I shot something the other night, and granted, I've been pumping out a lot of content to try to promote the Kickstarter. So some videos I'm doing at midnight and I'm improvising as Onyx here in my garage where I've built a little set for him. And admittedly, the more tired you get, the kind of crazier shit comes out. But sometimes I think that gets me a little closer to the character. But I improvised something the other night where he's reviewing this like sexy female Leatherface action figure.
Oh, I saw that.
Right. And then it's like by the end of it, he's yelling about how he accidentally said he wanted to fuck Leatherface. But then by the end, he's like, well, so what if I want to fuck Leatherface? It's like, well, I don't know how he's both ashamed, but still yelling it. It's like complete paradox.
Yeah, those Code of Akias are interesting.
They are
dynamic into the world of people.
Yeah,
you mentioned it, obviously.
Kyle, you had mentioned Henry Zebrowski. Andrew, I saw that you worked on an episode of Your Pretty Face Is Going to Hell.
Yeah,
I wanted to hear about that connection.
Oh, it was super cool. I think an editor on the show wrote me on Twitter and said, hey, the guys were talking about an upcoming episode and your name was thrown out, and basically I follow you on Twitter, so I thought I would just like let you know and then tell them if you're interested. It was a really weird like inside connection, and I wrote back and was like, yeah, of course. And so I then had to just go through the regular process of auditioning. I had to put something to tape and send it to them. But I got the part and yeah, flew out to Atlanta and it was a lot of fun. And they've been doing that show for so long that it's a really well-oiled machine and everyone was just so chill. And I've been acting since I was 8, but I mostly do my own stuff with no one watching. Or I might be out in public with other people, or I might be with other actors, but I'm still doing my thing, and I only really need to impress myself. So it was definitely a different dynamic because I'm not the most practiced actor when it comes to being a part of somebody else's project, finding out what they want. How do I calibrate the weird stuff I do to work for their project? And that was interesting, but I think it turned out well, and I had a blast.
You didn't have to do the red makeup, did you?
No, I was a human. Yeah, I didn't have to be in demon makeup.
That
That
sounds
would have been
like, yeah,
fun.
one of the worst things. Although I guess they've adjusted it over the years.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've mentioned it, we've kind of talked about it a bunch, but currently the Kickstarter is running for Onyx. Right now, about over halfway there.
Yeah.
Again, we cover a lot of comics, just kind of in the nature of what we do, but and Kickstarter has been a huge thing for that in general, but this past year with everything going on with COVID, it's been like a really great publishing route for people. For you, who's kind of run the gamut of kind of independent movies, working at Nerdist and everything like that, why was Kickstarter kind of the idea behind this one, and what was were you kind of nervous about doing that? I know, like, half a
Yeah.
million dollars, like, once that's done, you're making it. I mean, what has this been like so far?
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster, and I should have known it would be, but at the same time, I tend to do things that, even if I know logically the scope of what it will take, there's something in my brain that, like, forgoes truly weighing the consequences or just the future. I mean, even with making Worm, I was like, yeah, that's gonna be hard, but I mean, we'll do it. But then you get to Oklahoma and you're running around with a camera strapped to your chest in 110 degree weather, trying to orchestrate where cop cars should be behind you at what point in time. And you're just like, this is too much. And I put myself in those situations a lot, and this is one of them. And I think but I just felt compelled to do it because there's really no, speaking with full transparency, I've never had an offer for money to make a feature film. Anything I've made has been my own doing, through getting money from people that believe in me. And there's never been a studio or a production company that has backed any of my projects outside of when I was at Nerdist. So I've had meetings about Onyx, over the years, but they're always like, you have to fit whatever their agenda is. So you might meet with a production company that's like, well, I know it looks like we'd be interested in something like this, but we're actually starting to focus on like the farming community moving forward. And you're just like, fuck me. Or they might have a big supernatural comedy show. So you pitch an Onyx thing where he's like a private investigator for the paranormal or whatever. And they're like, oh, we're killing all paranormal stuff. We're not doing anything paranormal anymore. You just or they'll say, oh, so you troll newscasts. So you're like, it's like Ollie G. I'm like, well, actually, I've never trolled anyone in real life, except for maybe like, I don't know, one or two Onyx videos where I tried that format, but I don't really get off on that format creatively. And so nobody ever was like, oh, I get it. I get Onyx. You should make a movie with him. We'll finance it. It's just never happened. And I think realizing that there wasn't even a way forward for him at Nerdist was a real wake-up call because that was a place that I'd worked at for 6 years. And if anybody was going to incubate the character and try to like grow him on a larger level, narratively speaking, it would have been them. And they did try, but it did stop after that first run of episodes. So there's no way forward outside of crowdfunding. And I get comments all the time from people on my YouTube channel saying, we'd love to see an Onyx movie or we'd love to see what you could do with a real budget. And I just got to the point where I think his TikTok audience being as big as it is, which surprised me, he's got about like 775,000 followers on TikTok. And they all seem to be really into what I've built over the years with the character that I just thought, maybe there is a way forward if it's up to the fans. Like the idea of me pitching this movie that I wrote, I mean, I can tell you now, everybody will pass. And I feel bad sometimes because people will comment on my YouTube channel like, "Have you ever tried pitching to so and so?" And it'll be somebody that like passed on 10 of my projects over the last year alone. You know what I mean? But I know from the outside it looks like there should be all these perfect fits. But when you're on the inside, it's so much more nuanced than that. And people making sense of a horror comedy in general is hard. Even though I can point to all this precedence, I can say like, well, wouldn't you say Ready or Not's a horror comedy? Wouldn't you say The Babysitter is a horror comedy? Wouldn't you say that, arguably Get Out and Us edge their way into comedy because of how much levity is pumped into those films? Obviously, It Chapter Two was only a comedy and not even a horror. So I don't get why it's not a more sought-after subgenre, but bottom line is there's no Onyx horror comedy feature being made that's not crowdfunded because the only people that would make it happen would be the people that like the content. And it's a way to ensure that it's kept pure creatively to a degree outside of when I send the script to an entertainment lawyer and have them tell me how many, references I have to pull when I talk about Gadget Hack Wrench or Meatloaf or Balky from Perfect Strangers. But outside of that, the movie will be what I wrote it to be, which is a rarity and a luxury, obviously. And then maybe it'll change if we sell for distribution and the distributor says, cut 10 minutes or get rid of that one joke about him getting a boner while watching an episode of DuckTales. But outside of that, it should be whatever I wrote it to be if it's crowdfunded, which I think is a really rewarding thing for people that have been a fan of any of the stuff I've done over the years.
I mean, I won't say DuckTales, but Rescue Rangers was a weird.
Of course.
Or,
Well,
well, what's the other? What's the? Oh shoot, the Tiny Toons. Was it not
yeah.
Babs? What's it? Is it Babs?
Yeah, right? Isn't it Babs?
Think so. Yeah, that was a weird
And
time as a kid. Yeah.
I know. And on DuckTales, it was whatever the Dracula duck was, the female Dracula duck. I can't
Oh,
remember.
Morgana?
Yeah.
Yeah. With that, this kind of being brought to life and breathed by the fans and the people who want it, it gives you kind of the, again, the freedom to do what you want. Is there any added pressure on your sake to then be able to kind of deliver something specifically for the fans? Like, I mean, I imagine if any movie you want to make, no one sets out to make a bad movie, but like, if it's something through, WB's pushing or something like that, where it's being presented to people. This is like, people are seeing the process. They're going to be putting their money towards it. Is there an added pressure, or is that more like a good pressure pushing you kind of to really do something unique with it?
It's a good pressure. I think if I hadn't written the script yet, it would have been a bad pressure. And but I never planned on launching the Kickstarter without having written the script. But having written the script prior to launching the Kickstarter and knowing how much I believe in the project as it is on the page, I think all of the insight and feedback from people up to now on the Kickstarter campaign has just been good pressure. Because they'll ask things about it that like are in the script. They're like, "Oh man, is there anything like this?" And I'm like, "Yes, there is." They're like, "Oh man, I'd love to see Onyx do this." And it's like, it's in there. It's crazy how it's so far like it's really in tune with what I think most people would want to see. And then there are just straight up Easter eggs and inside jokes for people that have liked the news videos, the viral videos. So far it's been a good pressure. I really. There's like a private Facebook group for the fans of the Kickstarter, and it's really encouraging to see people say like, "I just shared it in my horror fan group," or "I just posted it about it in this group," or "I tweeted it so and so to reshare." It makes me like double down every day because the pace we have to keep to raise $500,000 is a pretty wild pace. But the encouragement and the feedback has made me really stick to it.
Yeah, and that's the fun thing about Kickstarter is kind of, again, you feel like you, obviously you're part of it, and also like, I mean, we talk about this on the show all the time. Is like, I will, specifically have guests on for things like, I want a specific hardcover version of this. Like, I want nice things and I want cool stuff. And like, it's nice to be able to kind of like, not only put your money behind it, but also like you said, kind of, hey, have you checked this out? Have you done this? And really kind of put it behind the people who want it. Is there, you have obviously kind of a lot of, the thing about Kickstarter tiers and everything like that. Is there anything you think really stands out or had fun doing or making? I know the VHS tape is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think the things I'm most excited about with the Kickstarter tiers are the things that actually generate new Onyx content. One idea that I had that I thought was really fun is basically like, I mean, I guess it's basically like riff tracks, but just with Onyx, but an audio commentary for existing films. And so I'll record an audio commentary for Gremlins 2 or Pumpkinhead or The Crow as Onyx. And I thought that was a lot of fun because it's going to be fun for me to sit and watch those movies and improvise. But also, it's just it's easy for the viewer to just pop the audio onto some headphones and, press play on their TV and just sit back and kind of have the movie recontextualized. I got a kick out of that. And then I really love doing animated things with Onyx, and there's like a short 90-second animated project that's a Kickstarter reward, and it's making me laugh. It's like fully R-rated, just insane. It kind of feels like a sequence from like Beavis and Butthead Do America. And then the toy, there's like a vinyl toy that I'm really excited to have made up.
Yeah, they hooking me with the toy. And then it's Kristen DeBarry doing the art, right, on the comic?
Yeah.
He's so fucking good too, yeah.
Yeah, the comic was cool too. It was fun. I have to admit, like, since I've never written for comics, I feel bad for the artist and the letterer just because I gave them like a film script. I gave them like a short, but I know enough to know that's not the right script, but I also couldn't give them a properly formatted script because it would have taken too much time. And so I was like, well, here's the script. It's written like a short film. I can answer any questions you have. I know this isn't the right format. And they were like, yeah, this isn't really how we do it. And I was like, I know, but I can't. I mean, they sent me instructions on how to write for comic books. And I was like, yeah, I know, dude, that's like, give me a few weeks to study that and then I'll know. So they made the do with what I gave them. And I'm very thankful for that.
So I have two quick questions. And then I'll let Tim do his final one. One, like, just kind of overall, again, this is kind of a character that you've lived with for a long time, but also, and directing for a long time and all this kind of coming together with the two, what do you think the biggest difference is for you, not only as kind of an actor or living with Onyx, but also as a director now with kind of all that coming together? Like, what do you think the biggest difference is for you in your career in that sense?
Like, specifically before going into this project, if we get it funded?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, everything you've learned kind of in both realms coming together with this.
I think it would be the first, like, the voice of Onyx is so dialed in. And then conversely, I feel like my voice as a director has gotten dialed in over the last couple of shorts. I feel like I will have a more cohesive understanding of how to execute each moment than I would have previously, than I would have even had a year ago. Like, making the short film I did called Little Willy was a really good step for me creatively, because we had to shoot it under a lot of duress. We shot at a live horror convention and, couldn't take much time to light, and was still able to communicate with my DP and get mostly every scene the way we wanted to get it covered and then some. And so I think that, and then actually some of the work I've done in animation as a freelance producer over the last year has really gotten me to a good place with communicating with my sound designer who's going to be working on the Onyx film. I just feel like I have a more cohesive understanding in regards to what everybody's role is going to be and how to best utilize all of the heads of department, to where I can really focus on the tone, what I want out of the performers, what I want out of myself, and kind of let everybody else do what they're really, really good at. I mean, one of the main things is that I think it's really important as a director to be self-aware and know what you're good at, what you're not good at. I'm an incredibly visual person, but when I go to cover a scene, I still think in very basic terms. And I think it's to a fault. And I think it comes from years of shooting internet content where it's shooting sketches at Nerdist. You had a day to get the entire thing or sometimes a day to get two sketches. And you just can't get fancy with your coverage. There can't be any specials on anything. You know, you barely have time for insert shots. So my brain got trained to cover things in a really straightforward way. And over a couple of the shorts I've done, I've gotten to a place where I know at the top to just tell my DP, here's what I need out of the scene. And then you tell me if my idea of how to cover this scene is going to work or if you want to do something more. And almost always the DP has ideas that I just don't have because they think more visually than I do.
I mean, the DP on this, Dan Alderstein, Antidonna is a great fucking, it looks so good. That's like such a well-shot show, which is crazy because it's so hysterical. But I will say, I think before we wrap, probably your greatest directing project or thing I've enjoyed is Armor for Sleep, My Town. Is that you at the end? Is that you're in the car, right?
Yeah, I am in the car, I think. Yeah, I don't remember why, though. I don't remember how it ends. I remember it's about a guy getting beaten up, and then...
Yeah, they all show... It's like... I think it's the majority of the band.
Oh, yeah, then they're going to get vengeance on the guys that beat him up.
Yeah. And then you're in the car, and then you get out at the very end. But there's, like, two clear shots of you in the car.
That's right. That was the music video that... I mean, this is, like, a whole thing. We don't need to unpack it, but... The idea of not making your day. When you're really young directing stuff with your friends, there isn't this idea of like making a day. And that was the first time I learned the shots in your head, just because they exist and you feel like it should all be doable in one day, that doesn't mean it's all doable. You can start the day and one setback leads to another setback leads to another. You could have unexpected weather. You can have an actor just decide to walk away for 30 minutes. I learned that there's all these other factors that can kind of like contort and contract like what you can squeeze out of a day. And on that Armor for Sleep video, we got to the end of the last day of shooting and we did not have the video done. And I there were problems. The house we were shooting in, somebody clogged the toilet and it flooded the entire basement. So we had to stop down for an hour. But I went up into the bathroom of this house and I just sat in the dark and I literally prayed for Falcor from Neverending Story to just come and take me away. The idea that I had to call a record label and say, we didn't get it. You know, sorry, we just didn't get it. It was breaking me. And luckily, the band, they were supposed to leave the next day for tour. I think they stayed in town for like one more day. And we got everything done with just like a half a day of kind of pickups. And it was all fine ultimately, and I'm sure I had to spend some of my own money to like make it happen, but goddamn, that I'll never forget that white hot panic sitting up in that bathroom in New Jersey, feeling that feeling you get when you don't make your day and there might possibly be no options to catch up.
I think there's some really great, it's a really well shot video. There's some great shots in the bathroom where it's kind of flipping between the two, but yeah, that's awesome. I'll let Tim do his last question before we do kind of where we can find you.
All right, so Andrew, gun to your head, if you were forced to write one episode of Two and a Half Men, what would happen?
Oh my gosh, I almost don't know enough about that show to even improvise, but I guess I would say I would write a Halloween episode of any sitcom, even shitty ones. Episodes. Yeah, the Halloween's the best episode, so I'd probably write something where maybe if it's like post Charlie Sheen era, we get some kind of weird reanimated version of Charlie Sheen. Because don't they kill his character off? I think that's how they dealt with it, right?
They must have.
I think they did. I think they were like, I think they did. I'll take a page from Wraith and just say that in Wraith he comes back as a as like a possessed drag racing car. So I try to blend Wraith in with the Two and a Half Men universe and say that in a Halloween episode, Charlie comes back as this drag racing car from Wraith, and he tries to kill Ashton Kutcher's character for taking his life.
That's perfect. It would be good. Onyx would fit in well among those. Yeah. Quirky. Good. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
We don't know anything about that show either. Obviously, the Kickstarter is active. When you're listening to this episode, it'll be up, so definitely go back it so we can all get it. But if anyone wanted to find out more about your stuff or anything of your stuff, I'm going to blank on it. What's the one with Barbara Crampton? It's the...
Oh, House Mother?
Oh, so fucking... It's so beautiful, too. That's so well shot. That's a great one. But if anyone wanted to find your stuff, how could they do it?
Well, first and foremost, the Kickstarter URL is just onyxthemovie.com, onyxthemovie.com. And that's where I'm trying to drive everyone these days. Personally, my website is Andrew Bowser, director, and all my shorts are there. My YouTube channel is youtube.com/BowserVids, totally. And then I'm on Twitter at Andrew Bowser, and Onyx is on TikTok at OnyxTheFortuitous.
I still enjoy every interview I listen to where you always talk about him as a person.
yeah.
That's fantastic. But yes, we are, what are we on, Tim? Twitter, pages, underscore panels, some other stuff. Our podcast sucks at gmail.com. Tim, where are you?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Madera.
But the most important thing is go back, Onyx. I mean, even just go to the kick. Like, you have a ridiculous amount of content on that Kickstarter. It is enough in itself. Just the stuff you've been posting on there. You are working nonstop. But thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about it. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This has been great. I've loved talking about the project with people, so I appreciate it.
No problem. And thanks so much for this episode. I promise next time we will get back to you talking about George Lopez, Tim, I swear. Well, one of these days.
Fingers crossed.